You're listening to the Save the Marriage Podcast. Your marriage can be saved and strengthened if you have the right information. Join Dr. Lee Baucom as he explores ways for you to improve your relationship and your life, starting right now.
Hey, this is Lee Baucom. Welcome to the Save the Marriage Podcast. I'm so glad you're here. So glad you're listening. I do appreciate that. And I hope that you're going to get a lot out of today. I got a lot of response from the last podcast. It was a special edition podcast that I released last weekend. And it had to do with how do you deal with an affair. And it came from the side of the person who had suffered the affair. You know, the person who was trying to figure out how to re-enter the relationship after having had a spouse involved in an affair. Now, coming up this weekend, I'm planning on a special podcast again because I got some people who said, what about the people who committed an affair? How do they work themselves back into the relationship? What do they need to do? So we'll be covering that this weekend. But this whole subject has raised the issue about sex and how sex is such a powerful issue in marriage. In fact, when they do research on why people say that they leave a marriage, they actually list a couple of things. And this is the list. They talk about money, kids, religion, in-laws, and sex. The only one that is specifically in order is that they argue about money. They give up on the discussion because of money. But the others, kids, religion, in-laws, and sex, in no particular order. But sex always comes out somewhere in that second to third top reason, sometimes third or fourth top reason. But it's a huge reason that people say that they're leaving a marriage. Now, that raises the question of why it's such a big deal. I mean, we're in a culture that is awash in sexuality, right? I mean, we're constantly surrounded by it. Even if on an award show somebody is twisting their rear around, it's all about sex, right? I mean, that's really the focus that we often get from Hollywood and from magazines and from ads. Now, you know, right now we've got an ad on TV that's some guys in boxers that has gotten a lot of controversy, and nobody seems to be talking about the fact that there's a lingerie company that constantly puts on very sexualized commercials. So we are surrounded by that. It captivates us, and yet we have very little real information about it. So we have all this influence of a society that's given us these messages. But what we don't know is, are we getting enough sex? Are we getting too much sex or not enough sex? Are we doing it right? Are we doing it wrong? It's such a taboo subject that we don't know. It's not like our parents told us what was going on with them, at least most of the time, didn't give us clear messages about what they were doing. And sometimes we weren't even aware that our parents were, you know, involved sexually. And so we have all these mixed messages that come at us, whether it's from being told from early ages how we should or should not react and respond, and yet being subtly coerced in other directions, or being surrounded by peers that gave us misinformation a lot of the times, or having experienced some place where religion played a role in our beliefs about it, or all the way to the place where we had that whole confusing thing that maybe we got some sex education school that really didn't answer many of those questions at all. And so we're trying to grasp at that, try to figure out what it's all about. We have very few clear studies that show us anything useful. You know, the range of what people say when you do surveys, you know, you get a wide range of whether people feel like they're having sex too much or too little that has no correlation based on the general population of whether they're having sex very often or not often at all. I've talked with some people who felt like they were having way more than enough sex, and it was once a year. I've also talked to couples that were having sex every single day and didn't feel like it was enough. And certainly that's the case with individuals who might be dissatisfied with their sexual relationship in the marriage. And so we have all this stuff that's also then tied into attraction. You know, do we have chemistry with our spouse? And one of the things that I hear very often is people saying, you know, my spouse has said to me, I love you, but I'm not in love with you. In other words, that feeling, that passion feeling is just not there anymore. And that makes it even more confusing. My dear grandmother, who was incredibly open with her discussions and left me with lots of good lessons in life and some understandings of being vulnerable and open and all those things, told me one time that chemistry is not really a big deal. And she paused for a minute and she said, unless it's not there. And it really stood out to me of realizing that for where there is not an issue, you know, where the chemistry, where the passion, where the sex is not an issue, it's just a non-issue. When couples, when everything's going okay, it's not anything big. But when it's not there, it begins to be a dominant driving force in couples struggling to get through a marriage and not understanding why that is. So what's going on there? What's up behind that? Well, one of the things is that we all have several layers to our self-esteem. You know, we have several different ways we understand ourselves. And those layers may be, you know, how our appearance, whether we feel good about how we look or how we are athletic or not athletic. So, you know, kind of our performance place. And then there's our work self-esteem. And then there are these, how are we as friends? How are we as parents? And there's also our sexual self-esteem. And that's the hardest place, the most vulnerable place for people to talk about. Our sexual self-esteem has so many components of little places along the way where we struggle with understanding, are we at an okay place? Are we accepted that way? And so we have this other piece that kind of intersects there, that we have this sexual self-esteem that may have been damaged by different experiences in life, but is certainly still on the line in married life. It's not like it suddenly goes away. We still are very self-conscious about that, and that makes it very difficult for us to have good conversations with a spouse about that. But there's another piece. There's this fantasy that somehow when you're married, you know, you'll end up in a married life and have all sexual harmony. You know, that everything's going to go just fine and then everything's going to fit together, and here's the problem. We all have different preferences. Not only different preferences like how often do we want to have sex, but how we want to have sex. Not only that, but that has a ebb and flow to it. And two people with two different ebbs and flows, it should be no surprise that sometimes we have a very difficult time getting that together, getting that to coexist in the same place. And when it doesn't, one of the places that we can feel most rejected is when we're out of sync with our sexuality and our partner. So let's say that one wants to have sex and the other doesn't. Both people are probably going to end up feeling a little wounded from that incident. One person's going to feel rejected and the other's going to feel pressured. And so we end up with this place where, you know, at its best, we kind of find the places where we fit together, and I mean that metaphorically and physically, but there are many times when it doesn't quite click, when it doesn't quite come together, and suddenly that sexual self-esteem is a little bit wounded. I've had many times of having couples come and tell me exact stories where one of them was saying, well, you know, I wanted to have sex that night and my spouse didn't want to. And then once again, there they go, not wanting to. And the other spouse said, I had no idea that you were interested. How would I have known? You didn't say anything. You know, you cuddle up against me. And so we have a very difficult time being very open about what we're wanting, what we're needing. More so when we're in the protective relationship of marriage where we should be more open, we actually end up often being even more closed down. And so sex ends up being a very loaded subject for all of us around marriage. You know, marriage and sex should be a place where there's a relaxation of that, and yet often it ends up being yet one more place of struggling in the relationship. Let's think for a moment about how vulnerable sex is. Because at its best, you're talking about letting two people who can't be any more close physically than that. There is no other time when we are that vulnerable physically with somebody. You're completely connected with this other person in physical closeness ways where, you know, there are not many other times when you are encompassing each other in that way. And so there's a vulnerability there that we often underestimate, that we often miss how powerful that is in how it shapes us in this relationship. But our limbic system understands this, and this is where we start talking about why is sex so powerful in a relationship. Our limbic system is the midbrain. you have that very primitive lizard brain, which is really, in terms of sex, it's all about, can I get that person pregnant or can I get pregnant? I mean, that's it's the biomechanical part of how our genes get carried on to the next generation. And so we have that lizard brain that's all about that. You know, that's all it's about, mating, mating, mating. And so then you've got this other piece above that that's more about the emotions. Now, above that's the thinking piece, right, the neocortex. It has all these thoughts and is processing, is critiquing ourselves. But that limbic system, that limbic place is about connection. And what we know is that when a couple is having sex, is being sexual with each other, the limbic system takes over in that moment, not when they're trying to figure out what the other person wants, but when they're engaged in the sexual act. I'm not just talking about intercourse. I'm talking about a sexual act of vulnerability. At that point, their limbic system ends up actually being more in sync. Not only that, but there are studies that show that there is such thing that's called HRV, the heart rate variability. This is not heart rate like how many beats, but it's the spacing of the beats and how those beats look on, you know, how the shape of them changes. And we know that stress changes your HRV. Stress changes that, and so there's a certain way that they even measure how your heart rate is showing your stress. But what we know that's interesting is when a couple is having sex, their heart rate variability actually begins to sync up. It begins to match up, and they are connecting in ways that are far more deep than their verbal skills are capable of. And so when we reduce it to, oh, it's just about sex, it's not just about sex. It's one of the myths that we carry around with us about sex, is that it's possible to just have sex. It really is not. It's not possible to do that. It's not possible to just have this relationship, because when we are so connected to somebody that way, we're revealing something. You know, I always think about the fact that there is the biblical notion. You know, and when the Bible talks about someone having sex, they use the term that they knew them. And I find that to be such an interesting term, because we have information about someone that you could not get in any other way when we have sex. We have a connection with them. We have a knowledge of them that goes beyond any other relationship. And so when people say, oh, it's just, that's just, that was just sex, I don't buy it. And I extend that into marriage, that there is a deep bonding connection that is present in that act, which is why it's so painful when things are going awry. So it's why it makes it so difficult. And while we get into these arguments, right, these discussions, now there are clearly some male-female differences. I mean, we're just talking about just the biology. There is a difference of male and female, and there's a difference of male and female even in our genetically encoded risk factor, right? I mean, having sex for a woman can mean bringing another life into the world in a way that men struggle to fully understand. And so even if there is protection in place, or even though there is no way for that to happen, there is still a subconscious attribution to the higher risk of that for women that I think sometimes is hard for men to understand. Now, there also is this competing need. What's the need that each person has? For men, for males, there's often a need for feeling competent that is an overwhelming place, a need for feeling competent. And how does this play out when, let's say, they're having a difficult time arousing a spouse, or having a difficult time performing sexually? That begins to eat away at that feeling of competence, which is why it sometimes begins to be such a battlefield. And why oftentimes when a man feels like he's not capable of satisfying a spouse, it begins to be working so hard against that relationship. Now, women have a need for feeling that closeness, of feeling that connection, protection, closeness. Now, again, I'm talking in generalities here. There are differences that are individual, but if you go with generalities, that's there. And so when a woman is kind of going for the closeness and a man is trying to prove its competence, closeness and competence don't necessarily go together, and they can end up being arguments. And that's where we find some of the strains that come in to the relationship. So then there are some stereotypes that get in our way. I've heard so many times, he just wants sex and she doesn't like sex, to know that those are stereotypes that we somehow reinforce. When I talk to men in private, I have not had one man say, I just want sex. That's all I want. I just want to get off. And yet I've heard woman after woman accuse the man of that. When I have women alone, they tell me how desperately they want that kind of connection, that depth of connection. And yet when I have men, they tell me how their spouse doesn't like sex. It's not about that. It's about when it begins to be a tug of war. It's about when it begins to be a struggle. So part of what we've done in our society is that we have gotten a lot of mixed messages. You know, we sit and we watch that, you know, if you're not being able to perform sexually, well, pop a pill. And from the women's perspective, there are a lot of books that say, well, you know, what the man needs to do is take care of the house and clean things up and all those other things, and then you'll be rested. And here's what we know. In the end, you can't use an outside source to make it work. A pill doesn't fix the relational issues behind sex. It may work on an erection, but it doesn't work to fix the relational issues behind it. Not only that, but we also have pretty clear evidence that the rate of sex doesn't go up very much when the man takes on more household tasks. It just doesn't, because it's about the relational piece. It may for that night, right? You know, if suddenly the man kind of takes on the putting the kids to bed and getting a bath together and all that, you know, we call that being romantic. But when it's the norm, it doesn't change the rates. That's just the fact. So we have these ideas that we fix these things externally, and we miss the fact that there may be a relational piece that we need to look at. So what is that relational piece? That sex truly is a connection when it's treated that way. It can just be a getting off, right? It can be that. But why is it that it's such a powerful element in a relationship? I mean, if it's only about getting off, masturbation does that. And what we know is that is not satisfying for most people in a way that sexual intimacy is. That the connection is really what we're after. Now, I'm setting aside the issues of sex addiction, that where it really is about getting the dopamine load. And let's be very clear that we all are going to get a dopamine load in sexual intimacy, and it releases all those great oxytocin hormones that are about bonding. And yet in the end, let's think about how that helps increase our level of connection with our spouse. And part of what happens is that couples end up fighting over something that is really too bad. I can't tell you how many times over the years I've had a couple come in and say, we just don't have time for sex. There's no time for that. How are we going to work that into our life? Now, let's do a little reality check. I'll say, hey, let me ask you a question. Did you watch TV last night? Because the vast majority of the country did. And if they say, well, no, not last night, I'll ask, well, how about the night before? Or how about the night before? In the last 4 nights, have you watched TV? And generally speaking, they have. To which I then follow up, how long did you watch TV? Usually it's between a half an hour and 4 hours. Well, here's the truth about typical marital sex. 15 minutes to half an hour is how long most couples take to have sex. We have this fantasy, right? There's somewhere in our head we hold on to this, oh gosh, it's going to have to be all night long. That gets in our way. Instead of saying, you know what? Prioritizing is important. I can sit there and watch TV and be brain dead, or I could be intimate with my spouse and still be fairly brain dead. I mean, that our bodies take over, right? And so I want to just kind of take away that excuse. It's not about time. It's about priority. The second thing I wanted to just kind of pull away from that whole piece is that we have this mindset that, you know, I'm not in the mood. I'm not feeling enough connection. Missing the fact that if we move in that direction, if we move towards each other in physical ways, let's just get away from the in sexual ways, but in physical ways, we actually are building the connection. We get into chicken and egg arguments about whether it's we start with connection that leads to sex or sex that leads to connection. The answer is yes, both. We can do both, and we don't have to say, I would prefer to be connected before I have sex, or to say, I prefer to have sex before I'm connected. Let's get rid of that false dichotomy and say that sex and connection are in the same ballpark. They are at about the same thing. If someone says, hey, I want to have sex with you, if you are in a respectful relationship, and a marriage should be, it's about, I want to connect with you. And so we get stuck in this rigmarole of trying to tease out who wants what, and all we end up doing is falling back into A, stereotypes, and B, dichotomies that do not exist. So the question is, can we say it's the priority is really connecting? We are going to work on the connection. We're going to work to be connected. If we're disconnected, maybe this is a way of connecting. One of the things that we also miss is how strongly the desire can build in a couple that leads only to frustration when there is no expression of it. So now we're at the place where we really are talking about biology, that we do have a body that has a natural rhythm to it. And one of the things I've noticed over the years is that women vastly underestimate what that is like for men, because the buildup, the feeling of buildup, of wanting release, and not just, again, not about masturbation, but wanting release of connection with a spouse, goes from desire to frustration to anger. Now, what I also understand from women, and again, I'm speaking as a male, I've never been a woman, but I understand from women is that that can make a woman feel like an object and only about the sex. And when that happens, all we've done is reduce it to one element. We're multidimensional. We're biological, we're spiritual, we're mental, right? We have lots of different pieces that interlock in ways that we will never fully understand, but that we cannot divorce one from the other, that there is a place to say we are built in ways that are sexual. I've had people say, you know what? I'm not about the attraction piece. It's just that's not about me. And I would say that's not the way we're built as humans. That on some level, there is attraction that floats around. There's chemistry that floats around. And there is certainly the glue of that in a relationship, in a marriage. And that's why we have boundaries that we place on the marriage of saying, you know, it's not that I will never be attracted to somebody else. It's that I choose not to ever have any action based on that. That I'm going to filter that attraction towards my spouse. And then we're back to connection. And when we nurture our attraction and our connection with our spouse, it tends to grow. But when we neglect it, it tends to wither. And so our choice is to say, am I going to keep that as a priority? Am I going to recognize that this isn't just some sexual thing, this isn't just some physical thing, that there's something else deeper than that? Sex is deeply physical. It's also deeply spiritual, and it's also deeply connected. We tend to underestimate that. And then when we are in a bad place, we tend to get angry about that. And we tend to blame our spouse and take out stereotypes. And so what I want to suggest is that just for a moment, we suspend all of these bombardments of what this all means to us and say, is this about connection? Is this not only how can we kind of connect with each other physically in a way of vulnerability that is not possible any other way? Is this about the spiritual, that we have some place where we get to ecstasy, right? I mean, that really what we're talking about is a basic loss of control. You can't have an orgasm unless you lose muscular control of your body. Your muscles have to take over at some point. That is akin to ecstasy in spiritual practice. And so can we bring in that piece of it? And can we, most of all, attend to the fact that this is a connecting way? Which leads us to say, are we willing to prioritize that there is a physical level of our relationship and we're going to set a priority to it? And it's too easy to let the other priorities get in the way. Just kind of say, well, you know, that'll happen when it happens. In busy life, unless you say this is a priority, it will not happen. The second place, after you decided, can you make it a priority? is can you say, I am not going to drop back to stereotypes. I'm not going to drop back to looking at my spouse and accusing them of a stereotype that is likely to be unfair and likely to be untrue. And can I see this as our connecting, a way of building the connection? Not only, it's a both at the same time, it's a both and. It's a way of connecting and a way of expressing connection. If we always make that a how connected do I feel right now, then you're waiting for two people to sync up on how do I feel right now. But what if you say the priority is on us connecting? Not just right, how am I feeling? Oh, it's 8 o'clock at night, so how am I feeling right now? But is there a connection that overarches your relationship that is beyond whether you feel extremely connected right now, but you're willing to be connected? And that's the piece where we see that the dance between a couple gets them in trouble unless they step back and say, oh, wait. Overall, we have this connection that we can share. And oh, by the way, this can amplify our connection. Okay, so now we've talked about some of the places that marriage gets into trouble around sex and how to get around that. My question is, how does that float around with you? Let me know your thoughts about that. You can contact me easily. You can send me an email at podcast@savethemarriage.com. podcast@savethemarriage.com. That's not a way of saying, hey, Lee, help me with my situation. It's, hey, Lee, this is what I thought about that podcast, and here's what I'd love to hear on another podcast. You can also leave a voicemail at, and this is the phone number, it's 4HELP, the number 4 and an H-E-L-P, 44132, 4HELP, 44132, or 443-574-4132. That's 443-574-4132. You can call and just tell me something you want to hear on the podcast. Tell me what you thought about the podcast, or I would love it if you would leave a comment below. If you're on the blog, you can just leave a comment below. If you're listening to this on iTunes, and we have lots of people who listen through iTunes, but you want to leave a comment anyway, just go to SaveTheMarriageBlog.com. That'll deliver you right onto the blog, and you can leave a message. And lastly, if you're interested in reading some more about how to work on your marriage, I invite you to grab my Kindle book. You can get that at SaveTheMarriage.com/Kindle. It's How to Save Your Marriage in 3 Simple Steps. And by the way, it's not just for somebody saving a marriage. If you want to just know what are the key ingredients in the marriage and how to have a great marriage, that's going to give it to you. Now, until the next time, I wish you the best. Thank you for being here as we work through the podcast, a pretty touchy podcast, and touchy, I say that in lots of ways, about sex and marriage. Let me know what you think. Let me know by leaving a comment or sending me an email or leaving me a voicemail. Till next time, I wish you the best. This is Lee Balcom with the Save the Marriage Podcast.
You've been listening to Save the Marriage Podcast. For more information and help, please visit us at SaveTheMarriage.com.